following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist. Today on the podcast, a conversation with Rob Frohwein, CEO and co-founder of online financial technology company Kabbage. The company is based in Atlanta, but according to Frohwein, the days of just walking into a bank branch to get a small business loan are pretty numbered, and his company allows small business owners to pursue loans online from anywhere. We talked about entrepreneurship, funding, and the future of banks. Oh, and we also talked about a surfboard. That conversation's coming up right after these stories. So yesterday on the podcast, we talked about Facebook's assurances that it was not going to launch Libra, its very controversial cryptocurrency, until regulators' concerns were fully addressed. Fast forward to earlier today in a Senate Banking Committee hearing in which lawmakers grilled David Marcus, the Facebook executive, on the project. Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio said at the hearing, "Facebook has said, just trust us. And every time Americans trust you, they seem to get burned." Marcus said that the company would do its best to fight fraud and to earn back the trust of more than 2 billion people who use Facebook services on the regular. The session was the first in a day of Capitol Hill hearings involving the tech industry. Facebook bosses, though, will also have to answer more inquiries about their crypto plans in a House Finance Services Committee hearing tomorrow. In a win for U of I and a loss for IIT, a top computer science academic is making a move downstate. The University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign has hired Eunice Santos as its new dean of the School of Information Sciences, effective in August. That according to a statement from the school. The statement also said that the school's vice chancellor of academic affairs and provost recommended her after a year-long national search. Santos earned her doctorate in computer science from the University of California at Berkeley, as well as bachelor's and master's degrees in math and computer science from the same school. Coming up, I'll talk with Rob Frohwein, the CEO and co-founder of Kabbage, an online financial tech company, about small business funding and lots more. That conversation after a super quick word from our sponsor. At Wintrust, there is no one-size-fits-all solution because there's no one-size-fits-all business. They come in different sizes, in different industries, and with different needs. You won't get cookie-cutter services based on your size. Wintrust provides personalized focus no matter what kind of business you run. Whether you're looking for deposit accounts, lending options, or treasury management solutions, Wintrust bankers are prepared to meet your business where you are and help you get to where you want to be. Find out more at Wintrust.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. We're joined now by CEO and co-founder of Kabbage, Rob Frohwein. Rob, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
So talk to us about Kabbage and how it seems like it's kind of a new space. It's occupying its own little spot in the business lending space.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. So we started the company about 10 years ago, really focused on initially providing working capital to small businesses, our hook, if you will, at the time. And I don't think we realized how impactful it would be as we ask our customers to give us direct access to data sources that relate to services that they use. So think about their bank account, their payment processing, shipping, social, accounting, that data. And we bring that in automatically while they're online, filling out effectively their application. So a business owner can land on our site and actually go to approval and funding within, on average, 6 or 7 minutes. It's truly the exception that it goes longer than that. But importantly, that concept of connecting us directly to data allowed us to provide a fully automated experience. It also allowed us to build a product that allows customers to come back again and again and borrow, because thanks to that persistent data connectivity, we know exactly how a business is performing at any point in time, even after they initially apply.
That's a very radical departure from, I think, what we think about when we think about a traditional loan, especially in the business space. We think about this being a very paper-driven, formally kind of old-school process, and that seems very different. Do you feel like this is an industry-wide shift with a lot of other moving pieces in the financial technology space, or where do you see the future of that?
Well, you know, it's funny. When we started the company, we honestly didn't think we were doing anything all that remarkable, right? At that point, it was 2009, 2010, and of course you would have a fully automated experience. But we were shocked to realize that, you know, the experiences, even the new ones that were out there at the time, did not automate the process. And in fact, today, we remain the only one that's really fully automated through the process. But yeah, I absolutely think it's the shift. I talk to banks all the time, and I'll be in a bank. You know, we have these meetings with banks sometimes, and there's like 20 people from the bank in there, every stakeholder you can imagine. And I say, okay, everybody close their eyes. You tell me that if in 10 years you believe that people will walk into a branch, that people will fill out a paper application, that people will go through the process. Nobody believes it. I mean, nobody raises their hand yet. It's really, really hard for banks to abandon a process that they've done for so many years and really adopt new technology.
That's interesting you say that, because I think that touches a lot of industries. I think where we see an industry that's been around for a while, sometimes it's very difficult to shift away from that legacy business model, the way things have always been done. And it takes something very disruptive to come in and do that shifting for them. What about risk and barriers when we think about moving to more automated, more technology-based systems for banking? You have a unique vantage point for seeing, you know, objections that people might have to technology simply because I think kind of fear of the unknown sort of thing. Where do those come up, and where do you see the industry responsibility for targeting those and answering them?
Yeah, so also in those same conversations, you know, folks will always be, we have to have a manual route, you know, for people who don't want to do it. And the reality is when you sort of create a solution where somebody can take kind of the old manual path, or they walk down this newer path, one that may be less familiar to them, they'll always gravitate towards the manual path. So, and the organization itself, so the customer will orient themselves, and then the organization won't fully commit itself to automation and digitizing what they're doing. And as a result, they'll get suboptimal results in the digital channel because they haven't fully committed to it. And so they don't have the amount of data. They don't have, you know, people are, you know, afraid to say yes and opt in and afraid to take risk and frankly overcome challenges that inevitably happen when you go through change. But that change is absolutely necessary in order to get to the other side and really build a better experience overall, and one that will withstand the, you know, more of the test of time than traditional paths have done.
And so to back up a bit, what is the origin story of Kabbage? What was that first idea like that made you think, you know, this is where I want to go and this is what I want to build? What was that initial spark?
Actually, I have to tell you, I don't think I've shared this story with many folks. I was literally thinking about sellers on eBay, you know, selling product. And you might have, you know, this is, you know, again, goes way back, that 30-year-old guy who had a surfboard in college and looks into his garage and goes, I need $100 for the weekend. I've got a surfboard hanging on my wall. Why don't I sell that? But I need the cash now. I can't wait 21 days to sell the product and collect proceeds. I mean, as silly as that sounds, that was the original germ of the idea. And it very, very quickly became a platform for companies that were selling products online. So that was really the original iteration. We then moved in 2013 and 14 into really serving all small businesses, not just those that were operating online. And in fact, today we've taken the key strengths we've developed around repeatability and automation and all of these, and a brand that we've really developed. And we're now taking that same theory and we're pushing into other products and services, really with a focus on helping small businesses manage their cash flow and really building a treasury function for the small business owner who really needs to be spending his or her time focusing on the business and what the passion was that got them into that business in the first place, whether it was plumbing or baking or whatever it may be, and allow us to help you do the things that you end up spending too many hours each week on and don't do very well on, which is managing cash flow.
You have a very unique vantage point for looking at the economic climate of business lending. I think a lot of times when we think about business lending, we just hear the end result. So-and-so company got this capital or loan or whatever, and we hear maybe later the company started with a loan for X amount, things like that. But you're kind of right there in the middle of it. What, in your opinion, you know, what insights could you share about the economic climate around this very specific topic of business lending?
So, you know, it's really interesting because I've been hearing from others in the space that they're seeing a slowdown in borrowing from small businesses, like the economy is shifting. We're up well over 40% year over year. We put out over $2 billion this year. So you can do the math in terms of what we expect to put out. Last year, $2 billion last year. Well, we expect to be north of 40% growth this year. So we're seeing a very strong climate, and we actually see solid loan performance. So typically when you see an economic slowdown, slowdown. You may or may not see that in the originations you do, but you would actually see an uptick, I think, in bad loans or non-performing loans. And we're not seeing that. So we're seeing a very, very strong economy, businesses that are borrowing diligently, prudently. So they're borrowing not at rates that are way above or below where they were before, but are consistent with where they were before. But a very sort of bullish atmosphere for sure.
What has you most excited right now about the financial technology space?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been paying a lot of attention to distributed ledger and crypto and all of that. That's very exciting. I'm trying to think of, you know, how it might apply, you know, to an industry like lending. Mostly that puts me thinking around the capital markets function and how we can, you know, ease capital and the capital markets function for companies like Cabbage. But I'm also really excited about creating sort of a single platform for small businesses. And I think you see some companies out there like Cabbage trying to do that, like Squares and PayPals of the world. You know, we're all approaching it a little bit differently. Some are approaching it through sort of the e-commerce or the back office or a transactional platform. Again, we're focused on helping companies manage and optimize cash flow. So I think what you're going to see over the next couple of years are a handful of players really consolidating different financial platforms and providing single experiences, whether that's to the consumer, that's to the small business, or somewhere else in that continuum.
To close things up, though, my final question for you is, what is the misstep that you see most often and advice you could give to startup entrepreneurs looking for funding?
I think it's the same thing that vexes really any business, which is a lack of focus, the inability to, you know, you're going to be faced when you start up a business. It is one of the most rewarding things to do in the world. It's also, I can't imagine many things professionally that are harder to do. And so you're going to fail 3-4 times before you're successful. And you've got to be able to see yourself and persist through those downturns in order to get to the other side. So I think that's the biggest issue. I think capital plays a part in it, but I think a lot of other things play a part as well in terms of just constantly be focused on developing solutions to the challenges you see each day. You have to come to expect it. You've got to have nerves of steel going through the process. And look, I really applaud small business owners all the time. I was a small business owner. Frankly, a lot of what I do at Cabbage is thanks to the failure I had as a small business owner before I started Cabbage. And so I can appreciate more than pretty much anybody else out there how hard this is.
Well, thanks so much for your insights today. CEO and co-founder of Cabbage, Rob Frohwein, appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Continuing today's stories, outdated and pretty much empty buildings are still a thorn in the side of suburban Chicago office landlords, but a recent streak of companies moving into new space, plus developers reinvigorating languishing properties, are helping to take the edge off. Fueled by strong demand during the first half of the year, vacancy in the suburban office market inched down to just above 22% at the end of June from 23% at the end of the first quarter. That is according to Jones Lang LaSalle. It's the third consecutive quarter that vacancy has fallen in the suburbs and the lowest it's been since the second quarter of 2017. For background, the vacancy dip is a good sign for a market that's been stung in recent years by a parade of big companies leaving for downtown in pursuit of young talent. The big blocks of empty space they've left behind have been pretty hard to fill, and many owners have been hard-pressed to justify updating their properties in the middle of a lack of demand to help recoup their investments. More on this story at chicagobusiness.com. Just a couple of weeks after announcing plans to buy rival drug maker Allergan for $63 billion, the drug maker AbbVie said it acquired Mavu Pharma, a drug discovery company backed by Fraser Healthcare Partners and Alpine BioVentures. The cliff notes is that Mavu Pharma's approach to cancer treatment leverages the immune system to target diseases. The company in January said it expects to file an application with the FDA for its lead drug in the second half of 2019. But North Suburban AbbVie is not the only drug maker betting on therapies in this realm. Eli Lilly and Novartis are also working to develop such treatments and advance immunotherapy research. Columbia College Chicago will report a $3.7 million annual operating budget deficit next month, the first in recent history for the nearly 130-year-old school. And it would have been worse without a faculty buyout program and staff cuts last spring. Columbia's enrollment peaked at over 12,000 students in 2008 and has been sliding ever since, pulling down tuition revenue. The school has long prided itself on accepting creatives overlooked by other institutions, attracting aspiring fashion designers, filmmakers, lawmakers and journalists, among others. But its open enrollment mission crashed into the harsh realities of the 2008 financial crisis and unraveled in an onslaught of competition. By last spring, the student population had shrunk to just under 7,000, though tuition remains on the lower end of the spectrum for private schools at just over $26,000 annually. President Kwangwoo Kim is plugging Columbia's unique arts program and revamping its curriculum in hopes of an enrollment revival this fall as the school opens a new $55 million student center. More on this story at ChicagoBusiness.com. Coming up, Livongo Health, which has drawn attention in recent years by scooping up executives from very prominent health tech companies like 23andMe and GE Healthcare, revealed details this week of its proposed IPO. More on that story after this word from our sponsor. Wintrust Commercial Banking offers a full suite of financial resources designed to meet the needs of middle market businesses and larger companies. With comprehensive and personalized financial solutions coupled with bankers who get to know your industry's demands, Wintrust Commercial Banking is committed to providing the tools to help your business reach its strategic growth initiatives. You've got a vision for your business, and Wintrust Commercial Banking is here to help you see it through. Find out more at Wintrust.com. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. This week, Livongo Health dished some details about its proposed IPO, including info on how many shares it plans to offer and at what price. The digital health company filed its registration statement for the proposed IPO with the SEC in June. At the time, though, the company hadn't quite worked out the number of shares to be offered or their price range. However, in an amendment to the registration statement filed this week, Livongo said it plans to offer 10.7 million shares of its common stock to the public while also granting its underwriters a 30-day option to purchase an additional 1.6 million shares. The company expects to price its IPO between $20 and $23 per share. The company, which brought in nearly $70 million in revenue last year, uses technology like glucose monitors and wearables to help users manage chronic conditions and stay on track with treatment through personalized alerts and reminders. Until tomorrow, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Thanks so much to producer Haima Black. Find breaking news, analysis, data, and lots more at ChicagoBusiness.com. And find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, and let's go continue the conversation there. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.